On this episode of Behind the Bars, we talk to Paul Niemeyer. Paul's a lifetime artist and haunted house operator operating out of the Midwest. Little did he know, he was about to move his haunted house into one of the most haunted places in Illinois. Orbs, spirits, and mysterious occurrences are just a few things to follow this move. Stay tuned to hear his story. So, give us a little background to yourself. You know, what do you do? How'd you get into this kind of stuff?
I grew up on a dairy farm. We were always interested in ghosts and always interested in stuff. Surprisingly, the farm that I grew up on had a couple of suicides, but never saw anything there, but always had a creepy feeling going into the barn, like it was always being watched. But we were just always fascinated with any kind of haunted house stuff. Anyway, as I grew up and, you know, got on my own, other interesting things happened here and there and everywhere, and just kept my interest spurred on the paranormal.
All right. Well, now that you mentioned paranormal, what are your views on it? You know, is it as prevalent as people think? Is there, you know, different kind of paranormal entities? What's your general view on it?
I'm no expert, but there's definitely paranormal. I've just experienced so many things personally that I can't explain. That most definitely, there's something. There's something out there, and let's face it, every culture has a ghost story, and they all have ghost stories. They all have ghost sightings. They all have, you know, something. There must be something to it that so many cultures have focused on these paranormal experiences and these entities. There's got to be something to it. Whether it can be measured scientifically or not, that's another thing. I don't know. You got me on that.
Yeah, that's kind of one of those 50-50 things, you know. This mm-hmm. group's going to say you can, this group's going to say you can't. There's no way to prove any of that one, unfortunately.
Right, right. And the thing there, too, is if it ever were proven, I mean, it would turn the world on its ear, because then it proves that there's an afterlife, then it proves that there's a paranormal, then it proves that there's a spiritual world, maybe it even proves that there's God. I don't know. Maybe, but, you know, until that happens, we're still just kind of hanging in limbo, wondering what's really happening, you know, so.
I agree that it would flip the world upside down. That would be...
Yeah, if you had...
It'd be interesting to see, as terrible as I'd say. I mean, it caused mass chaos, but...
I don't know. I don't know if it would, actually. I think that there would be a... I think there would be a restructuring of societal norms and our attitudes toward everything. If there was indisputable evidence that there was an afterlife and that... You know, once you leave here, you're going there. Maybe people will start acting differently. I don't know.
It makes a good point. Mm-hmm. I never thought of it that way.
Mm-hmm. You know, being an atheist, so, you know, do you believe that, and I think you are, aren't you? Or you're an agnostic. You're probably an agnostic.
Yeah, I'm just kind of, you know. If people want to believe and do their thing, awesome, go for it, you know.
Yeah.
I've researched numerous religions. I quite haven't found one that, tickles my fancy yet. So I can't say it's not true. I mean, it could definitely be true. I just haven't found the one for me.
No, I'm with you on that. I think it's healthy to question everything.
Yeah.
So there you go. But yeah, I definitely believe that there is a spiritual realm. I definitely believe that there's something. I think that there are probably entities that are of different nature that live in that realm. Why wouldn't there be? Look at the wide variety of entities that live in this physical world. So I can't hardly believe that if there is a spiritual world, it must be just as wide and diversified as this physical one is.
I could agree with that. So obviously, this one's big on where we had Abyss because, that was creepy as shit.
Right. It's funny. Actually, I remember one of the questions on here. Where was it? It was one of them that asked about do you have any other situations or any other similar.
Yeah, I have it.
At the end here.
Yeah.
Any other places that you experienced that are similar incidents? Yeah, there were.
Well, hey, we can get into that. That's fine by me.
Actually, while we were researching, before we moved out to Dollinger's, and we were researching places, we went to the cerebral palsy camp that was just down the street from where I used to live in Homer Glen.
All right.
And when I was taking pictures there, shit showed up on all the film. Joel was with me. And it was weird because I'd take a shot and there'd be this misty cloud that wasn't, we didn't see it, but it was on the, and I remember I immediately took another shot.
Yeah.
And it was gone.
And I have that all the time at some of the places I go to. There's nothing there. You'll take it and you're like, okay, this wasn't here.
Yeah.
Especially at the prison. I have that happen all the time at the prison.
I'll bet out there, definitely.
That place definitely. Is
yeah.
definitely a weird place to go, but
Well, I've got a little background story about that place. I sent those shots that I took, I sent them to a shop that I was doing business with that was in Lockport, and I wanted to have them make prints for me. And he called me up and he goes, what am I looking at here? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, okay, I'm looking at two shots here. One has this cloud in it, and then I'm looking at the time signature, and it's about 30 seconds later and the cloud's gone. So what are we looking at here?
It's a good question. You tell us.
I said exactly the question that was going through my mind. He said, well, he goes, I'll tell you, you said, I at the time, he said, I do the proofing for all evidence that comes through Will County judicial system. So any photos that are submitted for evidence, they send them to me. I scan them to see if they've been altered or photoshopped or anything. They may be perfect, but, when I run through the scanner, it'll tell you immediately if they've been altered. And he said, these haven't been. So I ran through my scanner just to check. So what the hell are we looking at? And I said, again, do not know.
Yeah. And I do not know if I want to know.
Yeah. But that place, the palsy camp, that place definitely was haunted too. Apparently some intern that worked there during the summer hung himself at the end of the summer in the main building. And nobody found him for a week.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so you can imagine he was bloated and nasty. And one of the caretakers, when we were out there shooting, one of the caretakers told me that he saw him, like long after he was dead and gone, you know, he walked in there and saw an apparition of him hanging there, all bloated and nasty.
Huh.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And you got a weird feeling from a couple places in there. Like the building that we had the stuff show up on film, or not film, but digital, you know, was abandoned. Like they didn't use that building anymore.
All right.
Yeah. It was weird. There's some interesting stuff there.
Yeah. I'm going to check that place out because that sounds kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. The Palsy Camp in Homer Glen. It's right on just south of 159th Street on Parker.
All right.
Yeah. Oh.
I know about where it's at.
Okay.
So when it comes to came to this location, obviously we were at the Dallinger Farms on Shanahan. How'd you come about this place?
Well, actually, we kind of stumbled on it when we left our previous location. We had no idea what was going to happen. I mean, we kind of threw everything into a semi and got the hell out of Dodge in the last place. I don't think you were at that location.
No, I joined. I think it was a year or two after you went to Dollinger's.
Okay.
I'd been to the other one, but I was working for a different attraction at that time.
Right. Sure. No, that place was a disaster. So we were looking, but we had actually approached Dollinger's earlier, like 2 years before, and they wanted nothing to do with it. So we just moved on, and that's how we ended up on Route 6. But after we had been out there for 2 years, apparently they had been monitoring the situation, and they offered us the spot.
All right.
At Dollinger Farm. So that's why, you know, when I went there, I was like, well, we had already scoped it out 2 years before and thought this would be, like, totally awesome to be here.
Yeah, so, I mean, going through the woods and past the cemetery, I mean, it location-wise, it was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yes and no.
Yeah, yes and no. Yeah, I mean, if it would have been closer to the city, it would be a lot better.
That's kind of the standing joke now whenever I talk about it is everybody says, oh, yeah, it's the greatest show that nobody saw.
Absolutely, we were.
Yeah, I mean, they all heard, because everybody's heard about it. You know, they're like, oh, I heard it was so great. It was just this awesome show. And, you know, did you see it? Well, no, I always wanted to.
Like, well, where were you, you know, 5 years ago? We could have used you.
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of the thing there, too. So.
Yeah, which I know you guys weren't the first haunted house that they had out there. I know when I was younger, they used to have, it wasn't a professional thing by any means, but I remember they used to have one in the old barn.
Yeah, and actually a lot of the props were still laying around, and we used a lot of them. So again, that whole thing looked like it was just abandoned.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think that was due to any paranormal, anything happening.
What kind of history have you heard about this place? Obviously, you scoped it out. I mean, had you heard anything before, you know, paranormal-wise before coming out here?
Just rumors, and, you know, everybody liked to talk about the barn and how, you know, it was possibly haunted, but nothing ever specific. And none of that really became apparent to us until we got there. And then things started happening. We started seeing for ourselves.
Yeah, definitely. I know, especially after, you know, once the sun goes down, the whole place changes drastically.
Boy, didn't it? Yeah, I mean, you just had a whole different weird feel about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I hated the old barn, you know, when it was daytime, let alone nighttime.
Yeah. And, you know, what was very interesting to me was that half of the people that worked in that barn saw something or felt something, to the point where some of them asked to not be in that barn. And the other half, who heard the first half, were so anxious to see and have something happen to them that they were waiting for it to happen, and it never did. And I think that some people are much more attuned to the paranormal than others. And I think that's what was happening there, because I would pull people out of a position where they were seeing things and they didn't want to be there anymore, and I put somebody else up in that very same position and they didn't feel anything or notice anything the rest of the night. So go figure. I don't know.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. That's a different kind of place. I still don't like it.
Right. It was uncomfortable. I mean,
it was very uncomfortable. I mean, you could walk in. I mean, there were days where I know just you and I, and you're over in the new barn, I'm in the old barn, and you know, you'll hear voices and stuff's moving. It's like, okay, I know there's no one here.
Yep. Oh. Well, you know, even Tim, who of course was the ultimate, you know, disbeliever. If you can't touch it, see it, you know, feel it, it doesn't exist. And one night when we were first got there and we were building that third floor in the old barn, he was up there working by himself one night late, and he heard the sound of hooves, like the back door opening up, and he heard the sounds of hooves on the wood floor and chains from harnesses, and the sound of like harnesses being taken off. And he grew up around horses, so you know, he recognized the sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought it was like me and somebody else screwing with him, you know. So of course he snuck down there and he was going to jump out and scare us, you know. And he got down there and the door was locked and the lights were off and there was nobody around and nobody there. And he freaked out and he got the hell out of there.
Tim, I don't blame him.
Tim, okay? Yeah. Tim. And I can tell when he told that story, he was noticeably shook. No, although the longer from the time that it happened that it got, the more he was. Oh, I'm sure there's a logical explanation for it.
Yeah.
And that logical explanation is what? Well, I don't know. I'm sure that there is. Are you? I'm
not saying, you know, thing that butts up on the canal. I don't think any horses are going to be walking back there.
I don't think so.
Yeah. And if so, I have a lot of questions.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I've often wondered about, like, okay, let's talk about like an incident like that. Is that a sonic reflection? Is that something that maybe the building actually absorbed, and possibly is just replaying it? I don't know. I mean, that is a possibility.
Yeah. Because I know the staircases were notorious in there. You'd look up, there'd be a shadow all the time. And, I mean, looking around, you're like, okay, there's nothing, there's no light up there that could be, you know, broadcasting this, but yet there's something standing there.
Yes, right. And that's what happened to me. I looked up, and there was the silhouette of the guy standing there. And all of a sudden, I realized I could look through him.
Yeah.
That I'm seeing details through that silhouette. You know, that was just disheartening at best.
Yeah.
You know, interesting enough too. I had two people that I did a walking tour with. One was a reporter, and the other one was I forget who the heck it was. Maybe they were both reporters. But anyway, they did not know each other. They were from different, you know, sources. As we were walking up that set of stairs that went up to the third floor, they both stopped on the same step, kind of closed their eyes, shuddered a little bit, and said, "Was someone hung here? Or did someone hang themselves here?" And they both stepped up. I remember because when it happened the second time, she was standing on the exact same step and almost said the exact same words of the woman that had said it like maybe a week or two before, a woman that she did not know. So
very, very strange.
That shook me a little bit. That kind of, you know, that they both got a flash of an image. The image was someone being hung or someone hanging.
I know I was doing quite a bit of research on it, and supposedly they used to hang people off there.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Whether or not, you know, it's 100% true is extremely hard to find because, you know,
Right.
Records aren't kept that great in the 1800s. That's
right. They're terrible.
Yeah, and being, you know, it was built in the 1830s, so I mean, it's very well possible. It's just, you know.
Well, my research came up with the exact same thing that you did. That it said that there might have been, it was a good possibility that there were, and actually the logic behind it holds out in that, the house there, what they call Grandma's house, was actually the old stagecoach stop.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the barn built in 1834, I mean, that was the hub of commerce, you know, for the whole area.
Yeah, because, I mean, there was actually a small town there at that point.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly. And, you know, and there was a small Indian settlement that were Potawatomi, and they actually traded with the whites there. They got along with the whites. You know, so this is basically what we call, for lack of a better term, it would be a center of town, more or less, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, if there was going to be a public execution, that would be where they would have it.
Yeah. And so, it's a little strange you mentioned, you know, the Native Americans, you know, trading with them and whatnot, because then you go a couple miles away, we have Aux Sable Cemetery, where, you know, we literally built a cemetery on Indian burial grounds, and they were not happy about it.
They were not happy about that, no.
Ooh, that was it's a very taboo thing.
Oh, totally. Oh, my God, yeah. And it was almost like they did it. I know when I researched that, too, I was shocked to read that. And you think that there's going to be some sort of okay, let's accept the fact that maybe there's, or accept the premise that there's a afterlife or there's a paranormal or whatever, there is a spirit world. Boy, if there is, you really went out of your way to piss them off.
Yeah. Oh, you're buried here. Yeah, we're gonna bury more people on top of you. Don't worry about it though.
I don't mind that. Yeah. Oh, this is your most sacred spot? Well, great. Let's just move right in and screw with that.
Yeah, not that they didn't have, you know, God, hundreds or thousands of acres of other places they could put it. Nah, we'll put it right on top.
Right.
And it's actually a really common thing that happened back then.
Oh, it was.
Because they figured, it's a burial ground. It was, you know, soft soil. This and I was like, great, we'll just bury right where they did.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, you know, that was the thing, too, is there was a complete, like, inconsiderate. They just care about, you know, to them, they weren't Christians, so they weren't of any concern. And your silly little faith, whatever the hell it is, isn't as cool as our Christian faith, so it doesn't matter to us whether we offend you or, because it's, your made-up gods are just made up, not like a real Christian god. You know, I mean,
exactly.
To me, the whole thing was just ludicrous. The whole premise of it is ludicrous, and it always has been. So now, anyway, I'm sure that there was a lot of things that happened up there. I mean, okay, during the Black Hawk War, there was a massacre on the property. You know that, right?
No, I didn't actually.
Oh, okay. Let me get my facts straight here. Trying to remember the name. The priest or the chief Shabana. Chief Shabana.
I'm actually related to him in some way.
Are you really? How interesting. Okay. Well, Chief Shabana, and I don't know if you know anything about him. Incredibly educated man, very intelligent. He spoke four languages fluently, including English and French. He had been east, and he had actually studied at some universities. I mean, the guy must have been just brilliant. So he came back. He was very influential in the Potawatomi trading with the whites at the time. He realized that, having gone to the east, he realized that there was an onslaught of white civilization coming, and there was nothing you can do about it. So he decided to lean into it and kind of, you know, accept the whole thing and see if he can, you know, work that all out. Black Hawk was not in favor of that. Black Hawk was the antithesis of that. So he and Chabanon met, and they did not get along very well. Black Hawk told him that he's starting this war, and he expects Chabanon to support him. And Chabanon said, "I'm not doing it. We got a good thing going here. Why do I want to screw it up? We're prosperous. We're trading with them. Everybody's doing well. That's just it's stupid to screw that up." Black Hawk said, "No, this is our land. We need it. We want it. They're violating it." He goes, "I'm going to bring as many warriors as there are trees in the forest." And Chabanon shook his head. He looked up and he said, "You know how many whites are coming? As many leaves are on those trees. You can't win this war. It can't be won. Don't fight it." Then he walked off, and Black Hawk wasn't taking no for an answer, so he sent a hit squad to that particular group of settlers, or the Indians that had settled along the riverbanks that were there. And they rolled into the camp, grabbed the chief, and basically, you know, raised the entire tribe to come out. They flayed him in front of everyone, tied him to a stake, and then burnt him alive.
Wow.
Yep. A couple of the braves made a stand. They slaughtered them too. And then the message was, you know, this is what we're doing to you if you don't jump on board and support Black Hawk and his war. So that happened on the property.
I had no idea on that one.
Yeah. I'm not sure how the waterways have been altered there, but I know that settlement was down there somewhere. And again, that's a meeting of, you know, the four rivers there. So, mm-hmm. You know, and they have that IM Canal. So I'm not exactly sure where the Indian settlement was supposed to have been, but somewhere around in that general area where the Dollinger Farm is on the side that we had the haunt.
All right.
You know, so, I mean, there are, I was always amazed at how many, orbs and, you know, clouds of protoplasm and stuff that were, taken by, customers that would take a picture of their friends, you know, in line and stuff. And what's up?
I just wondered if you ever told your Ouija board story.
Did what?
Your Ouija board story. Talking about paranormal.
Oh, yeah, my Ouija board story when I was a kid. Oh, yeah. you know, I get the name Abyss.
No, but I have a feeling I'm about to find out.
Find out, right? Yeah, Terry just was overhearing, and she kind of leaned in and said, "You should tell him your Ouija board story." When I was about 10, there was a family in town. They had 8 kids, and it was like the typical movie scenario. 8 kids lived in this old house. It was beat up, and but it was like, it was huge, just huge. It just went on and on and on. And had all kinds of secret rooms, and there was an attic. And we used to go up there and we'd screw around in the attic with a Ouija board. And one time we're playing with it, and it's saying all kinds of weird things. Okay, now we're all 10, so it says, "Who are you?" And it said, "I am black as sin." And I said, "Do you have a family?" "I have a sister." Where is she? "She is in the abyss." And we're like, we didn't even know what an abyss was. Okay, so basically, there's a bunch of 10-year-olds playing around with this Ouija board, and it just spelled out abyss, and none of us know what it is, what an abyss even was. You know, so how did that happen?
Yeah, that's...
You know, and actually that little moment that I always thought about that, because then after a while we looked up abyss, and of course it means the bottomless pit, the pit, you know, from the biblical pit. And that's kind of where I got the name from. Because that incident happened when I was 10.
So yeah, it definitely stuck with you because, well, you're a little older than 10 when you started.
Yeah.
Just a few years.
But it stuck with me.
You know? Yeah.
That's the kind of... I remember, yeah, and I remember we just got the hell out of there. I kind of remember seeing a face in the darkness that freaked me out. And I'm not sure if that actually happened or not. We were pretty upset, and I was 10. So, not sure. Not sure on that one. But,
yeah.
No.
When it came to, you know, using this property, this location for your business,
mm-hmm.
did you have any fears or concerns? You know, obviously you heard rumors, you know. Is that something you thought would just add to it, or is it kind of, you know?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. I was more dismissive. I thought, yeah, right. But found out.
Yeah, maybe we were a little wrong on that one.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. There was definitely something there, definitely. But again, you know, it ended up, adding to the whole mystique of the place.
Yeah, and this isn't the first actual haunted place. Weren't you in, was it the Rialto basement?
Yes. Yeah.
Supposedly, they're kind of hush-hush about it, but you can find a ton of history of people that were... killed there and killed behind in the alley, actually.
Yes, I found that out too. Yeah, and there was definitely something there. We saw lights one night dancing around by the ceiling. Not really sure what the hell that was.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Yeah, and we went and explored in the basement there. There wasn't any real use for any of those spaces to, to incorporate into the haunt. But of course we explored because, we're basically 12 years old deep down inside,
Yeah, they unlock it. You're like, okay, I'll just,
Right, really. I'll explore. Dark, deep, scary place. Let's go.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's what pays my bills. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, it turns out, and there were, while we were down there, there were a couple of walled up tunnels that, like, as you're exploring, you could see that there had been a tunnel there, and it was bricked up. And there were a number of them, actually. And then I started doing a little reading, and it turns out that the bootleggers had tunnels that went out to the Joliet River, that went underground all the way, like from the Rialto, all the way out to the river. That's a couple blocks.
Yeah.
And the boats would pull up, and they'd unload the liquor into the tunnel, and they'd have like a little wagon that they'd roll it down the tunnel, and that's how they moved liquor into. Basically, Joliet was the distribution center for Chicago.
Yeah. I know there's still a ton of places, especially downtown Joliet, that some of them aren't even bricked up. I mean, obviously, they've caved in, but
right.
Yeah, there's still quite a few that are left.
Yeah, right. And in the 70s, there were a couple of them that had collapsed when they were building roads and stuff, when they were building the parking garage there.
All right.
The Prohibition tunnels had collapsed, while they were digging around, that nobody knew was there, So stuff like that happened, and of course they just built around it. But it, interesting stuff. There's all kinds of secret crap over there.
Oh yeah. I know, especially by the prison, there are a ton of tunnels everywhere.
Oh God, yeah. No, no kidding. So yeah, but that place had a creepy feel to it also.
You just have a knack for finding these,
I do.
Places to put us through.
Yeah. I think about it. I had a Ouija board experience when I was about 17. I think that's probably what Terry was referring to when she poked her head in here. But and the thing is, I hadn't screwed with the Ouija board since that incident when I was 10. It was like not touching it, not. Mm-hmm. And we were over at this friend's house, Dinah, and Dinah's house. Dinah swore that her house was haunted, and all three of her sisters had seen the exact same thing. Apparently, it was a female figure that came into the room, very maternal. They weren't scared of her, but like there wasn't anything threatening about her. But the female figure would come, stand at the end of the bed, and look at them like a mother looking at a child in bed. And then the figure would drift over to the window and put its hand in like it was moving the curtains to look out the window and was watching for someone, and then they disappeared. And that was like they were caught in a constant loop. Whatever that entity was, it was caught in a loop that it just kept doing that. So I never saw it, but you know, she saw it. And her three sisters, and I think it was something that was indigenous to them because her brother didn't see it, and neither did her parents. So all four of the sisters swore they saw the exact same thing. So
I've run into that a lot. I mean, obviously, I travel mm-hmm. around all these, you know, abandoned hospitals and psych wards and prisons. I mean, there's a ton of them. You'll see an apparition will show up, and sometimes they'll walk through a wall.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, when they were alive, they didn't walk through the wall. It's, you know, because that wall wasn't there back then.
Yes.
And it's stuff like that all the time. There's a TB hospital down in Bartonville I go to semi-frequently, and there's a spirit in the basement. Absolutely hates men. You can be a female, go down there, you'll have no problems. If it's a man, it turns evil.
Yeah.
It'll push you, scratch you. I mean, stuff will slide across the room. It's very bizarre.
Wow. Wow. It's,
yeah, I don't like going down there.
Yeah.
I'll stay upstairs. That's fine.
Well, I can totally see that. So one night we went over to Dinah's house, and there were four of us, and we were sitting like in a little TV room that was kind of like a porch off the main living room. And Dinah wanted to go get the Ouija board and screw around with it. And Don was like, yeah, sure. But then she didn't want to go upstairs by herself and go get it. She's too scared. So the two of them went to get it. And I was down with Pam, and she said, you know, it's really against my religion to screw with that. And I'm kind of scared of those things anyway. And she goes, if you would kind of stick with me, we wouldn't have to deal with it. And I was like, I'm with you, baby.
Yeah.
So they brought it back down, and we already had a solidified front, you know, we're not screwing with that, you're on your own. So they sat at the table, and they put two candles on either side of the Ouija board, and now we're sitting on the sofa, and we're eye level with the board, so we can see that they're not really touching the stylus, that they're just barely touching it, they're not enough to move it.
Mm-hmm.
So she's saying, Ouija, if you hear us, please don't harm us, but move the marker toward yes, but please don't harm us. Ouija, if you hear us, please move the marker toward yes, but please don't harm us. Over and over and over again, nothing's happening. And then all of a sudden, there was like a weird, like the lights just kind of flickered in the room. And both candles, I swear to God, both candles, the flames, like both rose at the same time. Like they started flickering like 2 inches high, and then went back down again, and the stylus shot off the board and off the table.
Wow.
Yeah, and we were all like, "What?" You know, and it ended right there. Okay, so now we're sitting there, and there's like weird shadows kind of in the living room, like looks like. Like someone was walking. It's out in the country, by the way. It's a farmhouse. You know, there's nothing out there. Nothing out there. So they had a little dog, and the dog was sitting in the doorway between the living room and the room we were in, a little TV room, kind of a porch.
All right.
And all of a sudden, the dog gets up, looks into the living room. And start shaking so badly it could barely walk. It's trying to like step backwards. It's peeing. It's so scared. It's peeing. and is whimpering and it's shaking and it's like backing into the room where we are. Like it's looking at something so frightening. It can't believe it's there. And we're not seeing anything, but the dog's freaking us out. So the dog jumped up on the couch by us and it was shaking, just shaking. So now we're staring out there and nothing's happened. We're not seeing anything. And all of a sudden, it seemed quiet, like just the quietest, like still, super still. I don't know, like outside, it seemed like everything was just super quiet. So I got up and I'm thinking, I'll be brave. You know, nothing's happened for a while here. I mean, who knows? I'm talking myself out of it. You know? I step up and I walk into the living room and I say, see, there's nothing here. And when I turned around to look at them, it felt like somebody put a block of ice on my back. It was like I was, and they could see, like my eyes went out and they went, what's going on? What are you doing? I said, oh my God, I'm so cold. I can't believe how cold I am. And then when I turned around, whatever was making it cold was gone. And I wasn't cold anymore.
That is, yeah, it's definitely, it's something that happens at a lot of these places we go to. I mean, there'll be a 20-degree difference change in, you know.
Yes.
A foot away, it's like, okay, there's nothing here, you know. We've had rooms that are completely closed off. I mean, it's summer, it's 100 degrees in there, and then all of a sudden you get cold. It's like, okay, you know.
Right.
Something's here, and it does not like me.
Yeah, right. And actually, I've heard that the cold spots are actually that it's not so much that they're cold, but that they're drawing the heat.
Mm-hmm.
That whatever this entity is that it's actually absorbing the heat as opposed to it's not emanating coldness. It's actually drawing heat from the area, and that's why it's cold.
Yeah. Yeah, because supposedly they need to do that to, you know.
Yeah.
You know, appear, if you want to put it that way.
So now this house, this Dinah's house. So that was the only thing that happened that night. And, you know, it freaked us out a little bit, but, you know, we moved on and got over it. So about a couple weeks later, Dinah and I went out on a date, and I took her home, and nobody's home. We went in, they had like a mudroom. Walked in the mudroom. And then walked into the main room, and there was like a big dining room table there. And when we walked in, there's a hallway on the right and the left. The left side went to the kitchen, and had a stairwell that went upstairs that you couldn't see. And then the right side had a entryway, and there was a spiral staircase that went up to the upstairs. We walked in the door, and I heard a footstep. On the first step, like off the right, and it went boom, 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 boom. Walked upstairs. We're here walking upstairs, and now Dinah's holding onto my arm. I remember I had bruise marks in the shape of her hand on my arm from her squeezing my arm so tight, and it was weird because you could hear the steps going up, and they walked across the upstairs, and we were like standing there just frozen. I couldn't even move. I wanted to run. I wanted to scream. I couldn't even move, just frozen. And the steps went upstairs, and then they started coming down on the right-hand side, like the stairwell that went down into the kitchen. And it got to the bottom step, and it stopped. And I heard the door open. And the whole room got super cold for just like a second, as if we walked into a deep freezer, and then not again. And we stood there for like forever, it seemed like, until we finally got the guts to kind of turn around and look into that kitchen hallway, and the door was closed, even though we had heard it open. And after that, nothing, a whole lot of nothing. But
that is one of the strange things I've seen, that, you know, you'll hear stuff move around and doors open and close. And I mean, you'll be sitting next to that door and the door never moved.
Yes.
Right, so it's bizarre that, you know,
these
things can manipulate it and you don't hear it or, you know, you don't see it. It's
exactly.
It's very bizarre.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. So, yeah, I've had a couple of things happening, but like I said, there was a really long interim there, you know, for my teenage years until ended up out at Dollinger's, that nothing happened. And nothing happened to me. So for the longest time, I was kind of wondering, maybe I added on to that. Maybe, I don't know. You know, I always thought, how could I've gone this long and nothing's happened. And then all the stuff happened at Dollars. I was like, oh, okay.
They made you reconsider real quick.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely reconsidering that for sure.
So obviously, I mean, bringing up Dollinger's again, was there anything that happened there that you couldn't explain? I mean, obviously I know there is because I've been there. I've worked there. I totally know it. I just, you know, what can you tell us that you've witnessed and you have no idea what it is, how it happened?
Well, okay. When I saw the figure of the guy standing on the staircase one night before the show started. You know, and that's the story I tell in the My Ghost Story episode.
My name is Paul Niemeyer. My ghost story began when I first arrived at Dollinger's Farm in Shanahan, Illinois. I'm part owner of Abyss Haunted House. It is a seasonal haunted attraction. The owners of the Dollinger Farm approached us and made us an offer to build a haunted house out of the barn on their property. We jumped at the chance. The first time I had seen the property, I was blown away. It had the cemetery across the street. It had that beautiful old barn. It was made of stone and weathered wood. I thought to myself, this is a perfect haunted house location. The Abyss Haunted House is a series of rooms, different themes. We've got hillbillies and the butcher room. And they're connected by a series of dark hallways where I may have things hanging down or someone hidden in a corner that just messes with people as they go by. So it's a pretty big show.
My name is Christina Murphy. And I am the makeup artist and cast manager of Abyss Haunted House. The barn itself was built in the 1830s and has a lot of history.
The story goes that Wild Bill Hickok, as a teenager, was an oarsman on the Iam Canal. He had brought his barge up to the back of the mule barn, and a bully by the name of Charles Hudson wanted to unload his barge first, so he roughed up Wild Bill and made it clear that he wanted to pull his barge up first. Wild Bill was not happy with the arrangement, so he took his lines and moored them off on the side of the canal and sat back to watch the fun. Charles Hudson's barge came along, hit the ropes, and the barge capsized, and all of those bags of grain came down on top of him and trapped him at the bottom, and he drowned.
Once the evening starts to set in, you can definitely feel the energy of the property. You know you're not alone. There's a heaviness, a sadness.
We had a number of cameras just sitting around. The cast members were all encouraged to take shots.
We looked at the photos, and we don't know what it is. I saw outlines of bodies and outlines of faces.
I was just amazed at all the photographs that had orbs moving, shadows, ectoplasm, all sorts of things. I don't know if it is Charles Hudson. It might be. I've often thought, what was going through his mind as he lay at the bottom of that canal, knowing this is it, I'm drowning. One of my cast members had worked all day long, and she was pretty exhausted, so she decided she was going to take a nap, and someone took a picture of her. In that picture is an orb that's leaving a distinct tracer that's cutting through the corner of the photograph in a perfect arc. And the longer I looked at it, the more that orb looked like there was something in it. It looks like there's a face. My first experience was when the show was up and running. We were running late, as always, and I remembered, I left those cords sitting in the stairwell. So I thought, okay, I'll run back there real quick. I'll get those zip tied and we'll be off. So I'm on my knees, have my flashlight, and I'm zip tying the cords. And out of the corner of my eyes, I noticed something on the stairs. And I looked up and there was someone standing halfway down the stairs. And of course, my first impression was, get in place. The show is supposed to be starting. Then something in the back of my mind said, you're not looking at what you're thinking you're looking at. I don't know what this is. I found myself just staring at it. What is this? I finally got my act together enough to turn and shine my flashlight, and whatever it was just went through the wall. I was pretty shaken up by it. I don't know how long it took me to get my act together again, but I got out of there.
The most vivid experience that I had working at the haunt, I was in the barn alone one afternoon and was trying to hang props in a small corner. As I was trying to hang the props, I kept catching shadows out of the corner of my eye. Knowing there were spirits and things that were in the building, I asked them to stop. They kept playing with me, and I knew there was nobody else in the building. There was no way for anybody else to cast a shadow. A second later, a light flickered, and I just happened to glance up as a shadow was passing over the light itself. I could see the outline of the light bulb through the shadow. There's really nothing else to compare it to. You know a shadow when you see a shadow. That's when I got creeped out, and I actually left the building. Later that evening, somebody was taking pictures of me as I was applying makeup. When we went back and looked at the pictures, I noticed the shadow looking over my shoulder. And the coincidence there was that that picture was actually taken the same night that during the day I was seeing shadows.
When I first saw that photograph, I really didn't think anything of it. I thought somebody had their finger in front of the lens. Later, when we started going through the photos and looking at them in a little more detail, I realized that if it had been a finger, there wouldn't have been any information on the other side of that shadow. But there was.
There was no doubt in my mind that it was the same thing that had been in the barn with me earlier. The fact that it had followed me outside later on, it makes me wonder how often they are there. If they followed me home, how often am I being watched?
I think that it's Charles Hudson. He's very lonely and sad. Just as Charles Hudson's physical body was trapped at the bottom of that canal, I think his spiritual self is caught in that barn. That's his eternity. I don't know if this property is going to be haunted forever, but it's definitely haunted now.
That was probably the most prominent thing, for me anyway, that happened to me personally. But, I mean, there was a lot of stuff. Shadow showing up in pictures where there was nothing that was casting a shadow there. You know, all kinds of stuff. Mostly just a lot of orbs zipping through pictures and leaving, you know, trails behind them. But the trails were all like in perfect curves. And, you know, if this were a speck of dust that was captured, you know, the flash or something, they don't move in perfect curves.
No.
Not to mention, you know, I can do the math. When the aperture is open for it to make that long of a tracer, in the brief, you know, microsecond that the aperture was open, that piece of dust would have been traveling 300 miles an hour. It was not a thing that happened.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen those pictures, and I mean, I shoot photography.
Sure.
Obviously, everywhere, and there's definitely a difference between a piece of dust and what we were capturing out there. It doesn't even compare.
Yeah, absolutely. You know.
Is there anywhere, obviously, on the property, is there anywhere you didn't like going? Obviously, I mean, the old barn's a big one. Well, but, you know, is there anywhere, you know, you kind of like shied away from as much as possible?
Yeah, the west side of the barn where the electrical box was. At the end of the night when I had to go over there to shut it all down, I mean, I actually walked through the barn after the show was over and turned off all of the electric candles And I was always by myself, and that was a creepy, creepy, creepy job. But I remember making myself do it. You know, I would kind of almost force myself to go do it. And hope that nothing happened and everything was okay. But I always had the creepiest damn feeling doing it. But for whatever reason, going through the barn was creepy, but going out and shutting off the electric box, that one, I don't know why, but outside of the barn, on that side of the barn, the other sides, no problem. Even the back of the barn was no problem. But on that side, I always got the, like, there was always something, like, I felt like not only watching me, but like it was standing, like, right behind me is what it felt like.
I never had anything on that side, luckily, but, you know.
Yeah.
I never really went out, besides when it flooded. I mean, we all know how much fun that was.
Yeah, no kidding.
That and the raccoons. You know, you'd think you're being watched. Yeah, the raccoons were watching you.
Yeah. It was another entity.
Yeah.
I'd rather deal with a ghost. They were less destructive.
Yeah, much less.
No kidding. Jeez.
Was there any times you want to pack up and leave this place? I mean, was there anything that happened that, you know, you had to get out, you wanted to leave, you didn't want anything to do with it?
No. I never felt like I was in danger or that there was something that was threatening. Never felt that. Whatever was there was, I don't know, relatively, you know, docile. It was, I don't think it meant to harm anybody. I never got that. And everybody that had things happen to them out there. I mean, what did you ever feel like you were in real in danger or anything? Or
not really. No, I just, you always felt like you're being watched. And
right.
And it wasn't like a normal, you know, I feel like I'm being watched. It was very intensified.
Oh, totally. Totally.
And that's what I hated, you know. You know, I knew I was, you know, you and I were the only people there, and, you know.
Yeah.
A quarter mile away at the other barn, and there's something watching me, or there's something making noise, and, you know.
Yes.
I can see there's nothing there, but something's right. Making noise.
Yeah, right, exactly. And there were a couple of times, I remember when we were first building it, we had one of the semis sitting out between the old barn and the new barn. I remember walking between the two barns and seeing a shadow, you know, kind of scooting, like it looked like kind of hiding in and amongst. I thought it was one of you guys, you know, being cute, you know, hiding behind the semi, trying to jump out and try and scare me, you know, because I saw something definitely moving around in there. So I thought, oh, I'll sneak up and get them. Of course, I went over there and there's nothing, you know. So, yeah, there were, and then at that point, I still felt like there was a presence.
Yeah, you know? I never really felt it over by the, you know, the new barn area. I never really had anything over there. I was like, you know, okay, you know, it's
not in it so much, but around it.
Yes. But it seemed like in between the two barns was the one place I hated.
Yeah. Yeah. That space between the two.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. There was definitely something. Something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, whether it came from, you know, hangings or came from a cemetery across the road. I mean, there was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was a lot.
Yeah, definitely. So let's see what else you got on here.
Obviously, I mean, you said no one really ever got hurt, you know. Was there anything that, you know, any injury caused by something that's unexplainable? I mean, you don't know how it happened. It just, you know, something did.
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. Like, there was nobody that was, like, you know, scratched or anything. Because I know when we went out to L.A. to film my ghost story, some of the other stories, you know, like, we were in the green room with bunch of other people. They filmed probably, I don't know, maybe 6 to 8, you know, different stories that day when we did ours. So we're all kind of hanging out in the green room, and and everybody's kind of sharing their stories, and people are showing us, you know, like bite marks and scratches and shit that they had from God knows what, and we're like, what the
fuck? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there were some real physical, entities that something was happening there. They were looking at their physical mark on those people.
That's how it is down in Bartonville. I mean, that's not really bite marks, but I mean, have bruising and scratches. I mean, yeah, I mean, these old places, I mean, obviously you could bump up on something, get scratched, but I mean, this would be, you know, on their back, there'd be, you know, it looked like somebody took fingernails and scratched all the way down their back. And
Yeah.
There's no way that happened.
Yeah. Oh, they had all like scratches on their arms, and one woman had one on her shoulder. Yeah, that was crazy stuff. And you could see from their demeanor that they were much more frightened than we were.
Yeah.
And we were more intrigued. They were frightened. You know?
Yeah, we want to find out, you know.
No.
What is this? Not, you know.
Yeah, no kidding.
And, you know, it didn't kill us for a few years, so I felt we were pretty okay.
Right.
And it just like to, I think it more or less just like to mess with people.
I think so too.
Because it seemed the longer we were there, the more stuff would happen.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing too is, like, there were a couple people that said they saw the figure, like with a long coat and a hat, up walking around on what used to be the third floor. But there wasn't that one little section in the front where we didn't build it out. And they saw him walking across it because there used to be a third floor there, and that's where he was walking. Mm-hmm. You know? But it seemed like he was always out of their corner of their eyes, and the minute they would turn to where he was, he would be gone. You know? And I'd say that was indigenous of that experience. Was always kind of like out of the corner of your eye, you saw something or felt something, and then when you looked, it wasn't there. And
yep. I had that numerous times. You know, you'd hear a noise behind you, turn around, you catch a flash of something, and it's gone. You're like, okay, what is it? Where did it go?
Right. Or something moved in peripheral vision, but of course it's not there when you actually focus your attention on it.
Yeah. And then you spend the next, hour trying to convince yourself you're not crazy.
Yeah.
Because, of course, it would never happen again, right after. Now, it'd be fine for, hours.
Right. And that was the thing, too, is like working in that old barn, there were plenty of times that, something freaky would happen, and you'd be freaked out for a long time. And he'd always be on your guard, and any little sound and any little thing and everything, it'll set you off. And then nothing happened for a long, long time. Before long, you were like, maybe I made more out of that than what it was. And then something happened. Just about the time that you started thinking, maybe I went a little bit overboard on what I thought happened there.
Yeah, and then, Yeah, then it all comes flying back at you, like, okay, never mind.
Yeah, exactly. Never mind. Exactly.
Yeah, I know the third story. I hated the third story. There's always something up there.
Uh-huh. Right.
Whether it be, an animal or the paranormal, there was always something lurking for you.
There was always something, right. Yeah, that was it, too. That was the other thing, was the, the raccoons that would come in through the roof. And that's up in there. Oh God, the raccoons—they were—they were worse than any paranormal entity.
Yes, chasing them out of there every day. That was always a task.
The mess that they'd make.
Yeah.
No kidding. Oh, no kidding. Too funny.
So when it comes to, dealing with paranormal situations, do you have any advice for people? Obviously, I know we're not experts, but,
Yeah, no, I know. And it's funny because I hear a lot of people that, you know, they'll hear this story, and the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, boy, I wish that could happen to me. Oh, I really want that. That would be so cool if I saw that. No, it wouldn't.
No, you'd be scared.
No, it's not. Like, and I can tell you've never had that happen to you because you wanted to, okay? Because once you do have it happen to you, you know, you realize, hey, this is some scary shit, and you don't have any control. I think that's what the problem is. You cannot help but feel you have no control over the situation.
Yep.
You know, whatever's going to happen is going to happen to you regardless of what you do.
Yeah, regardless of what you want, this is happening, you know. Yeah, you don't get a say.
You're not fighting it off. You're not, you can't even acknowledge it. You're not even sure where the heck it is.
Yeah. Yeah, good luck fighting it off. You can't find it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, so I think for me, that was probably the scariest part of all, is that the loss of control unable to affect the outcome. So
give us a little recap. You know, where can people find your work? I know obviously you're a freelance artist. You're always somewhere doing something.
I'm something doing. Yeah, something. I was doing something. Well, let's see. Boy, where did you find my work? I don't know. Right now I'm painting a bunch of murals at some restaurants called Cajun Boilin' Bar. I did one in Orland. I did another one in Oak Park. And I'm actually waiting for all of the sketches or the proposal to be approved for the Joliet site. It's going to be where the old Tilted Kilt.
All right.
Yeah, the one that was in the mall.
Yeah.
It's on the edge of the mall there by the Macy's.
All right.
Yeah, that's going to be a Cajun Boilin' Bar. It's a Cajun seafood.
All right.
Yeah, so that's what I've been doing lately. I don't know. I've got a couple. Let's see. I am going to be on an episode of Vice at the end of April in conjunction with the artwork I did on the very first Mortal Kombat game, that I did the logo and all the artwork on it. And Mortal Kombat 11 is coming out.
Yes.
Yeah, crazy. The show Vice got a hold of me, and they did a really long interview with me on what it was like to be there in the early days on the first, you know, doing the artwork on the first game, and, you know, just basically that whole experience and what it was like to do that and be around those people and that kind of shit, you know.
That's awesome. I will put once it's up, I'll put a link down in the show notes so people can go,
oh, that'd be cool.
Interview and whatnot. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I know you're super busy with everything, so I appreciate you
that's right.
Coming on and talking with us.
Oh, always fun, man. I love it. It's great. I love talking to you. I miss seeing you and talking to you.
Yeah, we'll have to do dinner soon.
That would be great. That would be awesome.
As always, I want to give credit where credit is due. I would not be doing this for not for the help of a few friends and colleagues. All the information will also be included down in the show notes of today's episode. A huge thank you to Kay. Kay has allowed me to pester her over and over again with different questions and concerns which came producing this podcast. Kay is an extremely talented artist with experience in the music, film, and podcast industries all over the world. Kay also visits, explores, and documents abandoned places just like I do over on Abandoned Whereabouts. You can check out her work at www.justtheletterk.com as well as www.youtube.com/user/justtheletterk. Like the music for this podcast? Check out Alex Duquette Music. Alex is a lifelong friend who is always producing, writing, and sharing music all over the United States. Need something written for your business or podcast? Hit him up. You can find him over at www.youtube.com/user/AlexDuquetteMusic or contact him via email at alexduquettemusic@gmail.com.